Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. Here it is on February 11th, 2021, today's edition of Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. Thanks so much for being with us today. I hope you tune in all the time. You can always see our schedule and see all the shows we've done over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. That's the home website of the American Consortium for Equity in Education, of which we are a part. All right, and we'd love you to go over there, check it out. You not only see all our past podcasts, see our schedule, see all the other things we're doing, but our magazine, our online journal, which is absolutely excellent, called Equity and Access. And that's over there. You'll see the big icon. You can click on it and read it. And believe me, you will enjoy it if you're in pre-K-12 education or interested in pre-K-12 education. Okay, so please go over, check it out. The more the merrier. And by the way, everything we do over there is free. Okay, so check it all out, okay? Ace-ed.org. Good friends of ours over here at the Equity Consortium, the Learning Accelerator, and I have planned a wonderful show for you today. We're going to talk about the convergence of education and public health, bringing the expertise of those two areas together to provide education leaders with actionable guidance, tools, and strategies to understand and minimize the risks while maximizing the learning and wellness during COVID-19. In case you didn't know it, in case you had your head in the sand, there's a pandemic out there. We got to take care of these kids. And we talk a lot about this here, but what the Learning Accelerator is doing, along with their friends at Ariadne Labs, is just incredible, okay, in terms of the Parabola Project, bringing together public health and education. And on that note, my two guests today from Ariadne Labs is Margaret Ben-Orr. Hello, Margaret. I'm Larry.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be here. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Where are you calling from? Are you calling from Boston?
I am actually calling from Washington, D.C.,
the capital
of our great country, right?
Yes,
maybe
it is.
Have you heard of that one?
Yes, I have heard of it. Has it been in the news recently? I don't know. We'll find out. But
maybe.
Whatever. Yeah, we don't like that story very much. Pleasure to have you here, Margaret. Okay, and we also have, I think, calling from California, where it's warmer than either Washington or Maine, where I live, Jinso. Huh. Did I pronounce your name right, Jinso? Jinso? Jinso?
Yeah,
tell me.
Jinso.
Thank you, Jinso. It's a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. I'm actually calling from snowy Chicago. I grew up in California, and my parents are still there, but I'm very cold here today in Chicago.
That's not good news, because I live in Maine, and it's freezing here today, and it's just going to get worse if it's that cold in Chicago, because we're getting your weather tomorrow. So that doesn't make me happy.
True.
That's good. I was hoping you were going to say it's 75 degrees and bright sun in Chicago, but I guess not in February. Yeah.
Listen, right. I wish I could tell you that as well.
I know you do, man. You know, I'll tell you my favorite funny story about that. I lived in Chicago for 13 years, and one time the wind chill was minus 35, and I'm walking to work down in a loop, and there was a guy walking, and he asked me, shivering. He was wearing his late trench coat. And he said to me, well, where's the Sears Tower? And I said, it doesn't matter where the Sears Tower is, pal. You're not going to live long enough to walk over there, okay? I'll walk you over to Eddie Bauer. You can buy yourself a winter coat. And he told me, and I hope you didn't do this, Jinso. Okay, you ready? Okay, he had just flown in on an overnight flight from California. And probably it was 70 degrees in California in February. And his wife said, honey, it's probably a little colder in Chicago. Wear your trench coat. Okay? And brother, minus 35 wind chill, trench coat. So I hope you're dressed warmer than that, Jinso.
Much warmer than that. Much good. Warmer. Have a good jacket.
Yeah, good man. That's the spirit for California. Do you live in Chicago now, or do you live in California?
I live in Chicago. This is my home now.
Well, I lived in Rogers Park for years.
Oh, the
kids were
very cool. I live right on the border of Lakeview and Lincoln Park.
There you go. Close enough. I was six. This is Chicago conversation, Margaret. That was 6700 North. Okay. Pratt and Newgard.
Out of here.
Yeah. But Margaret,
I had visited Chicago once. So
there you
that's
go.
All I and, have and, to contribute.
Right, and I'm in Maine now, so I'm on the East Coast, so I'm with you, okay? So we're good, okay? All right. I'll throw this out, whichever one answers. Okay, the Parabola Project of the Learning Accelerator, as I mentioned, bringing together, which is so important, education and public health expertise, okay? I'll start with Margaret. Margaret, I believe you're the public health expert in this case. Okay, talk about Ariadne Labs and what you're doing here.
Yeah, so Ariadne Labs is a health systems innovation center, and while most of us sit in Boston, that is because we are a joint center between Brigham and Women's Hospital and Harvard's Chan School of Public Health.
Both excellent places. Let me say that as a New Englander, okay? My kids were raised in New Hampshire, so go ahead. Okay.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Great
so,
places.
You know, Ariadne, because we're interested in health systems innovation, we really focus on these critical moments throughout individuals' lives, childbirth, serious illness, primary care, sort of everything, surgery, everything in between. And then, of course, COVID came, and this has become probably the most critical moment in many people's lives, if not everybody's lives right now. And when we had the opportunity to pair up with the Learning Accelerator, it seemed like a natural fit for us.
Mm-hmm. And what are you? Okay, I know you're project and business development manager. Are you a public health expert, or to describe that side of your company, the public health side?
Sure. Yeah. So.
I'll ask again. Are you a public health expert, a doctor? What are you?
I am not a physician, but I do have a background in public health. I've been in public health for maybe close to 20 years now. That's a big number.
Okay, so you started when you were 7. That's good. We got that. Okay.
Exactly.
There you go. No problem. Yeah. No problem.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Okay, and Jinsu, tell everybody just real quick, give an overview of Learning Accelerator, and then we'll bring the two together.
Yes. Yeah, that sounds good. The Learning Accelerator is a national education nonprofit, and we envision a world in which each student receives an effective, equitable, and an engaging education.
Hear.
We've largely thought through that. Yep. And we've, you know, thankfully we're working with you on the Consortium for Education and others who believe in this similar mission. And prior to COVID, you know, a lot of our work was figuring out how do we get the right resources, people connected together. And so a lot of it was figuring out what are some innovative ways and how do we push our school systems to be more innovative and more student-centered. So students have more student agency. There's more voice. Teachers are better able to use data. And, you know, students aren't measured by seat time, but genuinely have they mastered the content and do they have a deep knowledge of it?
Right.
You know, with COVID, this is, of course, still a mission of ours, and we're moving in this direction as well. But, you know, we worked together on the Parabola Project with Ariadne Labs to bring together their public health expertise and our education expertise to, you know, develop some resources to help schools think through reopening, whether or not they should reopening, and if they decided to move forward in their community to reopen, develop some resources that are helpful in actually reopening.
Right, and it's so important. I mean, everybody's going through the hammers of hell with this. I mean, it's just brutal. I did a show this morning with a principal from San Diego Metro High School, okay, and they're now fully remote, okay. And then I've done them. You know, it's all over the board. Nobody knows how to be safe. Everybody's trying their best. I saw a big interview with the Baltimore school superintendent, city superintendent, and they're just trying so hard to build trust with the community. Okay, to be able to prove that the kids are safe at home, et cetera. It's just brutal out there. And on the equity side, you know, for our people of color particularly, okay, people with serious socioeconomic situations, losing this year of education, they haven't lost it, but it's a little bit less than what it should be, and it's not as effective as it usually is. So it's good. It's some real challenges out there. So now we've got you two together, all right? Learning Accelerator, Ariadne Labs. All right, and I'll ask Margaret this. Margaret, what has come out of the Parabola project, your project that has worked to give people information about coming to bring the kids back to school? So what's come out of this? What are the resources? Go.
Yeah, great. So, you know, I think our first challenge when we started thinking about this way back in May, June of last year, were these big buckets of, like, how do we even approach the idea of bringing kids back into school? And so what we came up with were these 9 public health principles, really starting off, like you mentioned, trust, leadership and trust being one key bucket of these principles. So we have leadership, we have risk stratification and risk prevention, we have testing and tracing, we have screening and triage, masking, physical distancing, cohorting, space layout, and ventilation. So we have these 9 principles. And then our first step was like, okay, so we have these 9 principles and we have some guidelines from various places, CDC, WHO, but how do we make this real and tangible for school leaders and actionable? Like, what can they actually do? So what we did was take these principles and we organized what we call the School Reopening Readiness Guide. And it really is a way for school leaders to go through and either start their plans or revisit their plans for reopening in person to make sure that they are sort of hitting all of the buckets that they should consider. And in the reopening guide, we've linked out to resources, guidance, you know, and particularly as new studies come out, we update that.
Yeah.
But then what we did was dive more deeply in a couple of specific areas. And so these are our tools, and maybe I'll let Jinsu talk about those in a moment. But these tools where we could give some really clear, actionable guidance. I think one of our more popular ones is around preparing and caring for the classroom. So this is really great, particularly for teachers. I mean, it's actually in this really easy checklist format. There are 2 checklists. One, how do you get your classroom ready at the beginning before you've invited students back in? Have you removed certain things that are difficult to clean? Have you rearranged the desks? And then a checklist that can be used daily of, you know, what needs to be cleaned? Did I clean it already? And it's meant where you could print it out, laminate it, and you could use the dry erase marker,
good.
Right? And just check off
good.
The things that you've
done. Let me stop you. Where is the readiness guide? Where is it? We're talking about it, but where can people see it and get their hands on it?
Yep, that's a great question. So if
you
visit Parabola Project, parabolaproject.org, that will bring you to the project landing page, and you can access all of the resources there. So there's a button that will bring you out to the readiness guide. You'll see all of the tools organized by topic, the more deep dive actionable tools. And then we also have a number of sort of stories or anecdotes from schools across the country who have done reopening. And maybe, Jinsu, do you want to talk about this? Because you've really been talking with a lot of folks and I think could share some good insights there.
Right.
Yeah.
And by the way, I want to just say, hold on. Jinsu is a former teacher and a former school systems administrator. Okay. So he's not coming into this without any knowledge of what's happening in the trenches. Okay. I just want to make that point. Mm-hmm. He's managing partner over at Learning Accelerator now, but they bring people out of the education field. I wanted to make sure you got a proper introduction, my friend.
Thank you. I appreciate that. And, you know, I think that, you know, all this work that we're doing with teachers, principals, parents, you know, we're all leading with empathy first, recognizing that everyone is in just a really, really tough position right now. So, you know, hopefully with the Parabola Project, you know, we're able to create some resources that make things a bit easier and better overall, that we're really aiming to do. So, you know, when Margaret mentioned some of the school examples, we realized that a lot of the people who were coming to us asking for support about reopening were asking us, can you just show us what it looks like?
Yeah.
So we were lucky to partner with some schools that actually did reopen with safety measures really in place. So not talking about places that weren't using masks, that weren't distancing, but places that were really taking these safety measures seriously. And so we were able to talk to teachers, principals, bus drivers, cafeteria managers, what have you on there, just to be able to show things like, here's some ways that people are doing lunchtime. Here's some ways that students are arriving and how the arrival procedures have changed.
Yeah.
You know, here's what teaching looks like, you know, when it's distant and kids are in masks. You know, what does it look like when some of the kids are at home and some of the kids are in person and you're teaching them at the same time? You know, what are some strategies around that? How do you engage students in this way? So we were able to talk to some folks and put together a lot of resources that include like videos, images, you know, documents that, you know, that real documents that schools use in planning and reopening and other artifacts so that other schools can look at these options, look at their own context and modify it and think about how they can reopen and not have to reinvent the wheel over and over again.
And, you know, you bring up a very interesting point, Jinsu. You know, we're very concerned about all those safety measures, and Margaret, you did a great job outlining those, the spacing of the desks, you know, the plastic stuff between the kids, if you need that, masking, the proper ventilation in the classroom, and I hope in the hallways as well. We can talk about that. But, Jinsu, you brought up something, to my mind, extremely interesting. How does all this, and I don't know the answer to this, I don't know, I haven't talked too much about this, all this said, how does it affect the actual learning and the actual teaching? If you keep the kids somewhat separate, let's say 6 feet apart, they're wearing masks now. If you're a child of color, you might be worried you're going to get it and infect grandmom or something. I mean, how does it all affect the actual learning and the way we have to teach these children? Okay. Do you have any information on that? And to me, that's a scary question, and I haven't asked it before. And if you don't have the answer, make one up, and I'll give you a PhD.
So, you know, okay. Like you said, I don't think anybody has found the perfect solution for all of this. But one thing that's been heartening to hear is, you know, one, all these schools that have opened do have a remote-only option. So these are all students that are opting in. So no one is being pressured into coming back to school if you're – and I think that's going to carry into next school year as well. You're not going to force people, like parents are nervous or students themselves are nervous, you know, especially if they were themselves infected or they've experienced a loss in their family due to COVID-19. That's just will be traumatizing to force someone to come back in. So the good thing is these students who are in school are those who have voluntarily opted to come back in. And so they all, you know, one thing that I was really heartened by is I talked to outside of in Massachusetts, a school called Uxbridge High School, and got to speak with some of their students there.
Wait, which
one?
Really say it again. Say again which school.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry, I didn't hear you.
Uxbridge High School.
Oh, okay. Uxbridge.
And,
okay.
Yeah. And I was really impressed with a lot of the students because I asked them, you know, aren't you nervous to be back in school? Like, what does that feel like to be back in school? And, you know, they all were like, you know, we're all really glad to be in school to see our peers. They, of course, said they miss things like pep rallies, sports. You know, and it's also weird that they're not, like, you know, eating lunch right next to their friends. Like, there are definitely some changes on there. But I was really struck by all the students saying, you know, they also understand the severity of COVID-19, and they're just thrilled to be back in school so that, you know, they are taking the safety measures seriously because they also understand that not taking the safety measures seriously means that they won't be allowed back in the building. So for the students who are back in school, I think it's been a huge mental boost for students. A lot of students mentioned that they struggled with the remote learning. Like, that was a real, you know, hardship. And, you know, some kids thrive in it, but for those who chose to come back, a lot of them explicitly chose to come back because they missed being in person, having that energy on there. And, you know, just being able to see classmates, even if they can't touch each other and hug each other and all of that, you know, being able to be at least see each other in person and having that routine of getting out of the house has been a major help for them, I believe, mentally. And for a lot of students academically, you know, having the teacher there, you know, there immediately to be able to answer questions, you know, available to provide support has been a major, major boost for them.
And are you guys finding, actually, I'll swing this over to Margaret. Thank you, Jinsu. Margaret, are you finding that the regulations hold, so to speak, everywhere in the country? And I'm thinking, you have to, when you teach kids here in Maine in the cold weather, you have to keep the windows closed, okay, the heat. and all that sort of stuff. In Florida, they can, well, they either have an air conditioner, they can open windows or take the kids outside, just as an example of what I'm thinking about. As you look at all the different places in the country geographically and climate-wise, okay, do you find that everything holds together right across the board, Margaret?
Yeah, you know, I think what we are finding with COVID-19, as we've learned from other other outbreaks, other diseases, is that often it's not one single thing that is going to prove to be the silver bullet, right? It's really a collection of public health strategies. And so exactly to your point, right? Like, right, the folks in Maine are probably not going to keep their windows cracked open all day in their school building. They might do it a little bit, right? But the important thing is that there are all these other strategies that we have in place. So it's really about the collection of them and not any single thing. So we do know,
like,
right,
answer.
Ventilation. Thank you.
I like that answer. It's true. We do. You take all these things. You do the best you can with what you got. I love that answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So ventilation, right? We. Upgrading the HVAC system and the quality of the filters, right? We've heard about that a lot, but there, you know, our good friends over at the Healthy Buildings Program, also at the Harvard Chan School of Public Health, say that's not the only thing you can do to improve ventilation. You can have the windows open, you can have portable units brought into each of the classrooms, and honestly, lots of places have just done is all of that if they can, or variations of it, right? And then other strategies, masks are incredibly important. And, the CDC just came out with a study, I think yesterday or maybe 2 days ago, showing that even more, right? Masks are important and the fit of the mask is really important. We also know physical distancing, ventilation we mentioned, right? Limiting the number of people together. You don't want to cram a bunch of, 20, 30 people into a tiny, tiny room. Hand hygiene. And then, of course, just staying home if you're not feeling well. When we put all of that together, we're really seeing that it's an effective way of bringing people back into buildings as safely as possible.
Yeah, there was a big article yesterday in the New York Times about Rhode Island schools, which have stayed open the whole time, at least they could statewide, okay? And there was an anecdotal story about, they're all open, but the teachers didn't feel well. They couldn't open the schools because all the teachers were home, okay? That's simple. And I want to ask you this, okay? I'm going to read you a definition. A plane, listen to me, everybody, a plane curve generated by a point moving so that its distance from a fixed point is equal to its distance from a fixed line. The intersection of a right circular cone with a plane parallel to an element of the cone. Okay, that's the definition of parabola. Why did you name this the Parabola Project, Jinso?
Yeah, so as a former math teacher, this actually really tickles me that we chose the name on here. But there's actually a really good reason behind it. One is that, a parabola has a minimum or a maximum. And so the lowest point or the highest point on there. And so our goal is to minimize risks and then also maximize health and wellness. So that was kind of a play on that. But in addition to that, parabola has a focus point. Oh, and learning, yes. Maximize learning as well, of course.
Thank you.
We also wanted to, yes, obviously – learning is important as well.
By the way, you're talking to a D math student, so don't feel bad. I'm just out of hand.
The other reason why we want the Parabola Project is every parabola has a point called the focus point. And so we recognize that schools, parents and others are just getting bombarded with information about, what's safe to reopen. The CDC is putting out information. There's other studies coming out. The media is reporting. They're hearing on social media other things from their friends. And so the idea behind it was, we wanted to bring everything together, all the guidance in one place so that it will be focused in one area. So kind of to bring everything to put it in one place so you don't have to go to all those places. A superintendent, school boards, teachers, et cetera, can come to this one-stop resource. Where it's all focused in on them.
And Jinsu, being a former math teacher, you said there's the logic of a math teacher. I love it. Okay? I love it.
Yep.
You were a math teacher, right?
Yep, I was. Yep, taught middle school and high school math.
Good, wow. Good man. I appreciate that. I want to ask you both, and this is a scary part of it, because we God, I hope it's working, but the vaccine, okay? Hopefully we'll have everybody vaccinated. I think they're planning by the summer, okay, or at least close to it, or however they're going to do this. There's going to be a lot of people vaccinated. Now, there's new strains of COVID and all this sort of thing, and how's the vaccine, I'll ask Margaret this, affecting, or has it created any changes within the Parabola Project?
A great question, Larry.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
It really hasn't.
I'm going to ask Jin. I'm going to ask Jinsu the math questions. I'm asking you the public health ones. Okay.
That's fair. Don't worry. That's fair.
Yeah, that's fair. That's good.
So the rollout of the vaccine is incredibly important, right? We I think the majority of us recognize that it's important to getting the pandemic under control. There's no question there. But we know it's going to be several more months, like as you pointed out, before we really reach a large portion of the population.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
We also know that the vaccines aren't yet approved for kids. We have a couple of clinical trials that are underway for the sort of 12 to 16, 12 to 18 age group. But if those stay on track, we don't expect results from those until sometime in maybe June or July. That's
right.
Sort of the estimate
right.
That's out there.
Right.
But what we've seen in the U.S. and around the world is that while we continue this critical work of rolling out the vaccine, we can still follow these core public health strategies, the masking, the distancing, the ventilation, hand hygiene.
Okay.
Yeah, all these things, and we're not seeing widespread transmission in schools. So right now, the Parabola Project, all of these resources and the strategies are still going to be incredibly important as we wait for the vaccine to reach the number of people that it needs to.
Yeah, and that's a very important point because, it is my hope that like healthcare workers, as we bring kids back to school, teachers will move up the chain to get vaccinated. But even as we do that, okay, we can't let down our guard. Okay? And we should.
Exactly.
So, yeah. The vaccine is one thing. Again, I'll say there's new strains of the virus out there. Okay? So we have mm-hmm. to be really, really careful about this. So just always keep this up. And, you know, Margaret, I have to ask you something. And Jinsu, I want to ask this. You listed a lot of things, testing, tracing, masking, the layout of the space, ventilation, etc. But the top one, okay, at least the way you presented it, was trust in, I'll say it this way, trust in leadership, okay? Mm-hmm. And I'm talking about school superintendents and whoever else in there as we talk about schools reopening, okay? That's the one thing. And, I've learned over the course of this time that a lot of that has to do with communication. And just as a measurement and a learning accelerator, maybe I should ask Jinsu this, okay? Jinsu, are you finding that there's a good trust component out there between families and the school districts to make all this work?
Yeah, unfortunately, yes and no. I'll say, we're seeing a range, but trust, like you're pointing out, is just such an important thing. We're hearing from schools, especially from populations that haven't been served well, especially vulnerable
yeah.
populations.
Yeah.
We worked with a group called Learning Heroes who did some parent focus groups. And something that, they were finding, not just in the Massachusetts area, but kind of around the country, was, a lot of people, parents, who went to these high-need schools were like, you aren't able to keep soap stock in the bathroom during a regular year.
Oh my God.
How are we entrusting you to, bring our child, during the middle of a pandemic? And, that's a really fair point. If you didn't trust the school beforehand to make sure that your child was safe and secure, it's a really, really hard mountain to climb up. And, even if the schools, and I think every school is doing their best safe effort, we're seeing so many schools that are adding new filters, portable filters, or if they're not revamping their entire ventilation system, they're investing in masks
right.
and PPE
right.
and hand sanitizer and other things like that. But, we've seen schools, message out videos showing, this is what we've invested in. But for a lot of people, there's, you know, a deep, you know, mistrust of the school system to begin with. And that's going to make it harder for people to come back. And so I think that trust piece. And one thing that we advise everyone is, you know, be transparent. When our parents and teachers all told our focus groups that you have to be transparent. You know, don't try to put, you know, the positive spin on things, because that makes us even more worried about what you are hiding. And so, you know, be openly transparent. Let us know when there's a positive case. If you have reopened, you know, tell us about your decision-making process, what you're considering. Because that transparency is going to help foster trust. And so that's something that we're messaging to school systems as well.
That's right. And, you know, I'll just use this as an example. You know, when I've been in, you know, big city schools. You know, I went to one, but that was a long time ago. But, you know, just recently in Boston, okay, and you walk into the men's room, the boys' room, so to speak, and there's one sink out of seven that's working. And two out of the eight toilets, okay? And that was prior to the pandemic, okay? And we let all this go, okay? And if you couldn't do it before, how are we going to do it now? And there is a trust thing that really, really matters, and I hope we learn the lesson that when you let things go like that, okay, it comes back to haunt you. Okay, there's obligations involved in this to keep things safe and clean and all that sort of stuff the whole time. And the pandemic doesn't make it any easier. Okay, and you can take that to any big city school district in the country. You know, it's just amazing. Okay, I got to tell you, I just want to ask one other thing, okay? Have you talked to teachers? I don't know if it would be Margaret or Jinsu or both of you, but have you talked to teachers? What are they... what are they here saying they need most right now? Teachers. Okay, Jinsu, I'll ask you, but maybe, I don't know if it's Margaret or not. Got.
Yeah, absolutely. I can jump in here. We've been talking to a lot of teachers around the country. And the one thing that I'll have to say is that, and emphasize, is teachers are working harder than they've ever had before.
Thank you for saying
talking
that.
Talking to 20,
yes.
You know, like whether they're remote or in person or hybrid, you know, they are in an environment that they've never been trained for. No one went to
school. That's right.
You know, I didn't take, you know, when I was getting my education degree, I didn't take a class called teaching during a pandemic. You know, no one did. And for a lot of teachers,
that's going to change at most of the education schools. Okay, but we'll move on from there. Yeah, go ahead.
So, you know, teachers right now, you know, those who are teaching remotely, you know, there are, of course, some online teachers before this, but most teachers, you know, were trained to teach in brick and mortar schools. And so this is a completely different pedagogy that they're going through. And even for teachers who are, you know, they're in buildings, you know, like I mentioned, you know, we're hearing about this simultaneous learning, the so-called Zoom in room with half the kids, you know, some kids in person, some kids, you know, online. And that's just draining teachers because, you know, they're trying to have their attention trying to give attention to both set of students, but, you know, it's just so hard on them to do that. So for teachers, I think the number one thing that they need right now, you know, everyone is just saying they just need time and support. And it has been encouraging to see schools providing, you know, half days of all remote instruction so that at least half a day, they're in addition to the preps during the week, all teachers are getting, you know, some time to lesson plan and grade and catch up on there. You know, districts have provided one thing that I've also been really impressed by is how many teachers have now dove in to ed tech with technology.
Ah,
you know,
right,
now every,
right.
You know, as a former, you know, director of technology, I can tell you, you know, rolling out something like Chromebooks, you know, a one-to-one program often took, you know, 3 years or 2 to 3 years. You know, there's a lot of process involved with it. And, you know, with the pandemic, it unfortunately, you know, forced the many districts to, over a weekend, make sure that every single student had
absolutely
a device. So, you know, I don't think anybody would have planned it this way, but one cool thing that has happened is, you know, you're seeing teachers all now know how to use Zoom or Google Meet, and all learn how to use like a learning management system or whether it's Google Classroom, and really cool to see some teachers really learn, you know, how to use programs like Pear Deck, and like, you know, using Jamboard to find ways to engage students. So that's been really great, but I will say, you know, again, teachers are really, really ragged right now. So it's something that the Learning Accelerator, something the Learning Accelerator is doing, and we've actually compiled some resources around this, is, you know, how do you engage students in these environments? We talked to some really, really great teachers, you know, who are doing some cool things like, One thing I love is one teacher used so-called Amtrak cars and set up different Google Meets. So if a student and one is a silent car, kind of like an Amtrak car, it's like I just want to be quiet in a quiet space and just work independently.
That's
another
cool
room a student can opt into is like, you know, a group collaboration. So you're allowed to talk to a partner or others in the room. And then the final room is the teacher room. So if you have a question, you can ask the teacher, can I come to you and get, you know, a one-on-one quick, you know, session with you.
I advise them to not forget the club car so the teachers can go get a martini if they need one.
Yes, you know, if you know a teacher, you know, if you are a student, if you are a parent, please make sure your teachers send them a glass of wine or a bottle of wine or something, because they're going through it right now.
It's brutal. And you know, I love that idea of the Amtrak thing. That's cute. It's a cute way of doing it. And I hadn't heard that. But what an interesting idea, because, again, not every kid learns the same way, and they're under pressure right now. How's the kid learn at home? Do they need quiet? Do they want more interaction? That's a very good point, okay? It's just amazing. It's so amazing, and we, you know, I say this as often as I can. With everything that's shut down over the pandemic, education did not shut down, okay? All right. We might have shut the physical buildings, but we did not shut down the attempt to continue learning. And it's been difficult. It's been a tough road. And now we got to bring them back. And that's what you guys are doing. Do it so well. I got to tell you, this is a great project. Okay. Parabola Project. You can go to parabolaproject.org. Everybody, we got to go. Margaret, thanks a million. Okay, I appreciate this. Who's the Project of Business Development Manager at Ariadne Labs, Margaret Ben Orr, my guest, who has been conversing with me, and Jinsu Ha, who is a managing partner over at the Learning Accelerator and a former math teacher who knows the definition of parabola, which I am very, very impressed with. Very impressed with, Jinsu. So, right. So
thank you for having us.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
Thank you, Larry.
But you guys are just – it's so important to bring the public health expertise of Ariadne Labs, okay, and the education expertise together. And a lot of people talk about that, but this is the, you know, this is a real collaboration. And I just hope we get the point out to a lot of people. All right, so thank you both. Good job, and please, both of you, in Chicago or in D.C., stay safe, okay? Thank you.
Thank you, Larry. You too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Jinsu. Bye-bye. Okay, Jinsu, huh? Partner over at Learning Accelerator, good friends of ours at our consortium, Margaret Ben Orr, who's over at Ariadne Labs. And this is really important stuff. Parabola, you know how to spell that, P-A-R-A-B-O-L-A, parabolaproject.org. Okay, and it's really just important stuff. I want to make sure I got that right. Hold on 1 second here. I just want to check. All right, I had it open here a minute ago. Here we go. Yes, parabolaproject.org. Okay, it's great. It's a good website, by the way. Okay, check it all out. All right. So, all right, we're going to archive over at ace-ed.org. Go over there, see what we're doing for equity. Join with us. Everything we do is free. Look at our magazine. It's fantastic, and you'll really love what we're saying and doing about equity over there. My name's Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio. I'll say to you what I said to them, please stay safe. Thanks for listening, and have a good day.